did then. And,
Hello?
Keep quiet, you. That's Neil O'Dowd there. I want to tell you something, Mr. O'Dowd. Founder of Irish Central, founder of Irish American Magazine, Irish Voice newspaper, Irish Immigrant, you name it. Founder of the Irish Lobby of Immigration Reform, author of Fire in the Morning, and that's about the Irish at Ground Zero, also an Irish Voice memo. And his latest book, your latest book, Lincoln and the Irish, The Untold Story of How the Irish Helped Abraham Lincoln Save the Union. And Neil O'Dowd, all of that stuff, though, is very impressive. But you didn't get anything this year. I did. I was inducted into Irish America Hall of Fame, something you haven't achieved yet.
I should have used that.
Neil, first of all, you're very welcome. And
thank you. It's been December since I've been asked to be on the show. I don't think I didn't notice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And are you busy this December? No?
Am I what? I have a couple of days off.
Good. Neil, obviously, we're at a very crucial stage of, if nothing else, confusion with respect to Brexit and the current situation, which we'll get to. But I would like you to take us back pre the Good Friday Agreement, and indeed your own involvement with some illustrious Irish Americans, headed by Bill Flynn, and to a period where there wasn't much publicity with respect to the role of your group in basically being a conduit from the White House, from President Clinton, to Ireland at a time when, say, Gerry Adams was being denied a visa to come to New York. Can you just take us back to your group and your role?
Sure, Adrian. Well, the success is many fathers, and the success of the Irish peace process obviously has become a huge story, more so again in recent times because of the dangers of the Brexit deal hurting the Irish peace process. But initially it took a lot of people, as you well know, and my big ambition right from the time I came to America and started some of the publications you were talking about was to try and bring an American president into the role of intermediary in Northern Ireland, which had never been successful because the American president has always traditionally sided with the British government. But we had a great team of people. We had people like Chuck Feeney, the billionaire who gave all his money away and started the University of Limerick. We had Bill Flynn, who was an outstanding, not just businessman, but Irish patriot and American patriot. Tom Moran, Bruce Morrison, the great Bruce Morrison, who brought so many green card visas to Ireland, 40,000 Irish who got the green cards as a result of Bruce. So we put together a group like that, and we decided to go to Ireland and try and influence the American government to get involved by talking to Sinn Féin first, and realizing, as we did after we talked to them, that they were very open to an opening by the United States, and that's exactly what happened. The original involvement of Bill Clinton came through that group. And then, of course, Bill Clinton just literally ran with the thing and appointed George Mitchell, who did such an amazing job putting the peace process together. But the important thing is, Adrian, that was just one effort. There were so many other efforts. Bertie Ahern, Albert Reynolds, who I have incredible time for. Great British prime ministers like John Major and Tony Blair, great Secretary of State, Mo Molan, who I remember you and I had a great interview with on your show. Excuse me. So there were many, many people who contributed. And it's very, very upsetting, Adrian, just when we thought everything was bedded down and sure there were problems, but certainly nothing like what it used to be, that 30 years after the Good Friday Agreement, that suddenly the British would just so unthinkingly and so uncaringly put it in jeopardy again because of a completely ridiculous situation called Brexit, which nobody seems to be able to understand, comprehend, or basically make it work.
Yeah. I see today that former Prime Minister David Cameron has resurfaced by saying he's so sorry about he's not getting a better grip.
It's a bit late, Adrian, given that was the single biggest mistake of the modern era by a British Prime Minister. He didn't need to hold a referendum on Brexit. He thought he would win the referendum and finally shut up the people on his right, these idiots like Jacob Rees-Mogg and these very, very English nationalist-type people. Mm. And he totally misread the audience. And you know yourself, when you put forward a referendum, a lot of times, even in Ireland, people take the opportunity to give the government a kick in the backside. And that's exactly what happened with Brexit in England. That vote did not need to be taken. He was so confident that he would get rid of the right-wingers by finally, people voting against coming out of the European Union. And instead, in one of the greatest shocks of modern history in Britain, people voted to leave Europe. And that's where we are now.
Yeah. Well, of course, I assume from that then that you won't be rushing out to buy David Cameron's book. Okay, well, that's it. It's Tower of Grace.
No, How I Lost the War would probably be a good title.
Neil, I want to, though, during the time, again, you've been over dealing with Sinn Féin, dealing with the powers that be in Northern Ireland, could you bring us back to that period when there was, at least in perception, a big difference between Sinn Féin and the IRAs, the activists who didn't want any part of any kind of agreement? These were a group who said the only British justice that they understood had to come out of the barrel of a gun. There was a hostile division within Sinn Féin and the IRA. Can you address that for us?
Excuse me, Edwin. Yes, well, actually, what happened was, and we know now in retrospect, that Sinn Féin had two great leaders. They had Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness. And in fact, nowadays, Adrian, you can really see the difference in Sinn Féin without either of those two men in power. The IRA campaign had been going on for 25 years at that time. And I think there were some very smart people within the IRA and within Sinn Féin who realized they were never actually going to defeat the British, that the best that could happen in Northern Ireland would be a bloody stalemate with bombings and killings on both sides and nobody really getting a foot ahead. So I think that Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness understood comprehensively that something had to change, and that something was they had to bring forward a new path for Irish republicanism. And that was a very dangerous thing to try and do, because when Michael Collins tried to do it back in the 1920s and bring forward a constitutional party rather than a military wing, he was assassinated in the Civil War. So it was a very difficult thing to achieve, but I think there were two incredibly remarkable men who could very easily have just gone on, been active in the IRA and ordering campaigns and ending up with a bloody stalemate. Instead, they put their own lives on the line and they decided that they would pursue a peace strategy, that was given very little chance at the time. But thanks to John Hume and people like him who believed in that strategy and who met with Sinn Féin, who met with Gerry Adams when they were blacklisted by everyone else, I think the impossible happened, and a big role in that was the United States, because Sinn Féin really needed to have international pressure on the British and the Loyalists and the Unionists to come to the table if they were going to come to the table, and I think that was the role that America played very well. But I think actually, Adrian, we had a moment in history. You and I can look back now over all the years of the people who did great work for Ireland and Irish America, like Bruce Morrison and people like that. Well, Gerry Adams and Mark McGuinness were really unique people and unique leaders. Maybe we didn't quite realize just how unique they were at the time.
Mm. You could add, of course, to that list a lot of others like Paul O'Dwyer, who...
Brian O'Dwyer.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Jemison, people in the labor movement. There was just a huge group of people who put their shoulder to the wheel when it had to be done. I mean, I remember Frank Durkin being one of the most fearless advocates of all. Frank was really the ultimate lawyer for the downtrodden and the forgotten, and he never forgot the importance of the Irish struggle. And, of course, he was taught by the greatest of them all, your Uncle Paul.
Yeah. Neil, let's fast forward to we know too much about Brexit because we're totally confused in that here. But I don't want to let this occasion go by without pointing out. We here got all excited over 2 weeks and promoted the trip to Ireland by great Irish American Graw McCree, Mike Pence, and what all we might expect, and he was going to go to Ireland. And remember where you heard it first, says we foolishly. This is the turning point. This is what is going to bring a long overdue, you know, American support and involvement, and by the time that Vice President Pence gets over to, what's the Jack in the Box, over in London, we'll all be sorted out. What happened? How naive? Please tell me you were just as naive as the rest of us.
It's interesting. Before I talk about Mike Pence, it's important we remember that Chuck Schumer, a man that you know extremely well, who you've interviewed many times, and Nancy Pelosi, who you've also interviewed, they have stood up for Ireland and Brexit. They have come forward and made it clear, thanks to Richie Neal's connections with both Nancy Pelosi and Chuck, that the Democrats in the House and the Senate would stand with Ireland on the Brexit issue. And if there were any attempt at a no-deal Brexit, that they would prevent trade legislation going through the House and the Senate. And those were great and very important things that the Irish community accomplished in getting, and the Irish government, in getting the Speaker of the House and the Senate Minority Leader. Mm. And we actually thought we had a chance with Mike Pence too, because Mike Pence, unlike Trump, has a long history with Ireland that is a meaningful history. He was very deeply influenced. In fact, he will tell you the most important person in his life was his Irish-born grandfather, who had emigrated to Chicago and was a bus driver there. Mike Pence was born just outside Chicago. And he revered and loved that man, and he made that clear in an interview I did with him some years ago when he was still a congressman.
Yeah.
And subsequently when he became vice president. So there was a lot of hope and expectation, Adrian, when he went to Ireland this time, that he'd be like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and stand up for the Irish. And instead what we got was the old Graw McCree, and it's great to be in Ireland, and, you know, leprechauns and all kinds of happy thoughts about Ireland. And then after the Irish Prime Minister, Leo, for Adker. I'd spent hours with him over lunch talking about the difficulties that Ireland faced because of the British imposition of Brexit. He walks out and he reads a speech from a teleprompter, basically saying Ireland and the EU are wrong, and that the British are right, and the Ireland and the European Union should go and negotiate in good faith with the British, which was an enormous shock to everyone present and led to an incredibly famous headline in the Irish Times, which essentially said, Mike Pence shits on the carpet.
Yeah.
That was exactly what it felt like to Leo and to all the Irish leaders, because they thought that he was one of theirs. Unfortunately, when you talk about the Trump administration, there's only one point of view that prevails, and Mike Pence is not going to contradict President Trump on anything, it seems. And certainly Trump is very close to Farage, he's very close to Boris Johnson, so he's much more in their camp than he is in Ireland's camp.
Yeah, but
obviously so is Pence.
Yeah, but the White House, you know, in the lead up to the visit, the White House sent out a very glowing press release saying how finally we had, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker, and indeed now Vice President Mike Pence, all on the same page. Why would I ask the question? Why would they send that out and raise hopes? Did he not get the memo? You know,
I don't think he got the memo. But you know, this is a chaotic White House. Forget about your own politics. They're unable to stay on message. They're unable to give a proper message. Like yesterday, it seemed like he was, you know, changing his mind again on vaping, and then the day before, changing his mind on gun control. This is a White House that doesn't, you know, like in any business that you and I will be involved in, where you sit around and you decide a position, and then you come out and state that position. But what the White House does is states the position, and then somebody objects to that position, and then they come up with a new position. Mm. And I suspect that's probably what happened, that Mike Pence was probably favorably disposed to the Irish position, but was told in no uncertain terms that the link with Boris Johnson and Donald Trump was much more important.
That brings us to Boris Johnson. It brings us to Brexit. It brings us to this deadline, Halloween, and one might have to ask if all of this is so distasteful, if, you know, the British government, if the legislators under Boris Johnson were really, you know, there for him to put him in as Prime Minister. Did nobody know that he was somewhat of a loose cannon, and how do you separate those two?
I think it's actually interesting to see what Boris Johnson is doing at the moment. I don't necessarily believe that he's quite as stupid as people think. I think he has two options left, and I think both those options, one is a no-deal Brexit, which he's realizing himself is completely impossible. But the only other deal he can do is to somehow massage the issue of the Irish border. And it's been very interesting in the last 48 hours what has occurred, where you're seeing the Ulster Union has suddenly realized, the DUP suddenly realized, just how much a disaster no deal Brexit would be for them. Yeah. And they're starting to talk about ways of making the backstop work in some different way. But what's behind all this, Adrian, is that for the last 2 years since the Brexit debate started, the Ulster Unionist Party, the DUP, had the balance of the power in Westminster. They no longer have that. They no longer have anything like the power they had.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that Boris Johnson would put his own mother in jail if it meant he could get a Brexit deal, he is now free to say to the unionists, this is the way I want to do it. I want to do it with a border in the Irish Sea. I want to do it so that only Northern Ireland is affected by Brexit, not the whole of Britain, and that we'll do a deal that will be very favourable to you. And what's very interesting, if you're reading today's papers, the Irish Times or any of the Northern Ireland papers, is this sudden realisation by the Unionists that they've lost the orange card, the one that they could threaten defeat over the British government. So now they may be prepared to come up with a plan that does keep the backstop intact in some form or fashion, and that they do deal in good faith with Britain and Ireland. So I wouldn't be as pessimistic as some people are that there can be no deal, or that a no deal is the only solution, because I believe that Johnson would be vicious enough and nasty enough and driven enough to turn on the Unionists and say, lads, I'm putting the board on the RC, good luck to you. And there's very little the Unionists can do about it.
My guest friend's Neil O'Dowd. Neil, I just want to ask you, though, if we take the backstop, is the backstop, what else is you know, encompassed in the backstop other than the border and, you know, the return of the border in Northern Ireland? What are the other components of the backstop?
Well, the major issue is to trade north and south. I mean, if you consider what will happen with a no-deal Brexit, which is, say, for instance, 70% of the beef and poultry that's sent from Ireland to England and from England to Ireland, it's sent through without any hold-up at customs. That would then change where you would have fresh meat being stored for 2 or 3 days or even more. And you'd have this on-time delivery system, which is a very, very particular type of system that ensures that things are on shelves in supermarkets. This would lead to massive disruption in those supply chains, and that would cause a huge, huge problem for Ireland and England, but mainly for Ireland because a lot of the meat and the basic products are imported from Britain still.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all that is under pressure now unless they can find a solution. And the backstop is really about not just preventing a new Irish border, but also ensuring that trade north and south flows freely and that people keep their jobs. And this is where the Unionists have been playing a double game, because the vast majority of the major farming community is Unionists, and they will be hit hardest by these new regulations imposed on the importing and exporting cattle and food and grain and all the other crops that they send to Britain and Europe. So from that point of view, you simply have to have a Brexit that... You have two options left, Adrian. You have a Brexit that is not a no-deal Brexit, one that is agreed between the two entities, the European Union and Britain. And the other option is to rerun the referendum, which is also one that's been talked about a lot, even by David Cameron yesterday. So... of the two, I think a deal with the European Union with an agreed, you know, backstop mechanism would probably be by far the best opportunity to make this thing. There are no good options, Adrian. The least worst option is the border in the Irish Sea.
For a great number of people, and I'm sure... including the Irish diaspora, with Brexit, with the severity of Brexit, particularly in relation to Northern Ireland, you know, it took 800 years, give or take, for Ireland and for Northern Ireland in particular to gain its own independence through the Northern Ireland Assembly. Wouldn't some look at that and say, wait a minute, they had an assembly in Northern Ireland. That collapsed with the passing of Martin McGuinness. And from that day to this, while all of the negotiations, while before and after Brexit, Northern Ireland sits there without, you know, a local government, And so, you know, are these crocodile tears that we're hearing? Why didn't they get into it? Why would things have been better today had the Northern Ireland Assembly gotten their act together and be part of the negotiations, which obviously now are just hanging out there and relying to a degree, you know, on the DUP, who thought they had a hell of a lot more influence than they actually have. How do we account for that?
Yeah, you're hitting a very, very important point there. And, you know, I'm very rarely critical of Sinn Féin, but I do think that they should have taken their seats in Westminster. 56% of the people in Northern Ireland voted against Brexit. And yet, you're absolutely right, if you're listening to the discussions or reading the newspapers, it sounded like the only voice that was important was the DUP, mm-hmm. who had opposed Brexit. But the whole point was, if Sinn Féin had taken their seats in Westminster, if they had found a way to get back into government, I think it would have been a completely different scenario, because then they would have represented the majority of people in Northern Ireland who voted against Brexit. And I've never understood that, Adrian, frankly, and I think that,
yeah.
from my point of view, once you make a commitment to politics, which Sinn Féin did so bravely back in the days we were talking about today, they should have kept going. And I don't accept their reasons for not taking their seats in Westminster. I think you go where the politics are, you have the influence wherever you have, and you're absolutely right that all the influence on the Northern Ireland part of Brexit was with the DUP. They were the guys on television claiming to speak for Northern Ireland. But the fact is that only 44% of people in the North voted for Brexit.
Mm.
And Sinn Féin should have been the voice of those people who voted against Brexit.
Yeah.
But I think due to just a little reluctance on their part to get involved 100% politically, I think they did a lot of damage to themselves. And I think this would have been a very different argument if they had been out there defending to vote against Brexit by Northern Ireland.
Finally, Neil, I want to ask you about the reality, without question, of America's role in the Good Friday Agreement, the interest in Northern Ireland, the great support of the Clintons. And then there was Irish America motivated without any political leanings. Get the Good Friday Agreement, and from that day to this, it would appear that America, and not just the administrations, but that Americans, and Irish Americans in particular, have kind of lost interest in Northern Ireland, and they figured everything is just absolutely fine, thank you, let's get on with something else. How do we get Americans back on track at this very crucial time?
Well, I think it's interesting, your point there, because there is the one thing Brexit has done is bring back Irish America, in my opinion. And the reason you know that is because the position of Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, the position of Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, very, very strongly in favor of the Irish position, was brought about in large part by a combination of people in the Irish government, who the diplomatic people over here who've done a great job on this, but also by Irish Americans pressuring and talking to people like Richie Neal and saying, Richie, this is your moment, or talking to Chuck Schumer or whatever. So I think in a strange way, there's 2 points. One, Brexit has relaunched Irish America, and that will continue, Adrian, because of the presidential election.
Yeah.
And we need to get people like Biden and people, whoever else is the leading contenders, on side on Brexit, on those same pages, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. So I think there is an assignment there. But you are right, and I think we can't underestimate, similar to the loss of Martin McGuinness and the retirement of Gerry Adams, we lost a lot of amazing people. We've lost Bill Flynn. Chuck Feeney's in retirement. We've lost Tom Moran. We've lost, you know, the great leaders who were very important 30 years ago in putting together the Good Friday Agreement. And so we need a younger generation of leaders, and I think that's a big question, because it's not that easy to come up with people who are dedicated to something that is not of huge interest to many, many Americans. So I think we're at a crossroads. I think Brexit, strangely enough, is actually helping put Irish America back together again. And I know things like your show and my website, we reach out to millions of people, and there is a huge interest. But we need leadership, and I think that's the thing that the Bill Flynn's and the Tom Moran's, the Chuck Feeney's and the Bruce Morrison's provided back in the 90s.
Neil, thank you. Thank you for joining us and giving us some insight.
Thank you, and I hope Mayo beat Kerry in the final today.
Yeah, okay. But I suppose you're going to be rooting for Dublin tomorrow. Yeah.
It's today, Adrian.
Yeah, but I'm saying tomorrow. Okay.
Thank you.
I know how easily you can flip, you know. With a home in Kerry, and
I feel very bad for Mayo this year, but
yeah, I don't want you to know that.
Your uncle and your cousin are both aware of my bet.
Yeah.
Although Frank is departed, that Ireland would be united before Mayo win the All Ireland.
Yeah, pretty good. All right, listen, enough. You have your own troubles, you know. So far, you have not been inducted, or nobody even brought up your name into Irish America Hall of Fame. I tell you what, just keep this between ourselves. I'm going to put in, a good word for you there. Okay.
That's very good. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
We can also de-induct people. You know that.
Get out of here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. God bless. Okay.
Bye.
All right, friends. You're listening to the Flannelly Show live from New York, and again, Neil O'Dowd, I think he spelled it out there, for us. I think that those of us who believe that, Ireland needs our help and assistance at this stage of the game should get in touch with. Of course, we know about Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, the Irish caucus. But I think maybe if it doesn't take that much effort to reach our own members of Congress and Senate and just rattle the cages a little bit, because even if it's not October 1st, Brexit is real. It is going to happen. And in the absence of great Irish American leaders, as pointed out there by Neil O'Dowd, I think we should every level of government, we should let them know that this is a crisis and that we are concerned. And just because we haven't been to the forefront, or at least not as much as when, we had what led to the Good Friday Agreement, the Northern Ireland Assembly, does not mean that we don't care.